Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at, among other things, keeping your home cool during this really hot summer with Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And I think there's a lot of other things we can talk about, too. You know, choosing green building, for example. A lot of times, I think, as we think back, people thought, you know, that's not going to fit my budget. But as more people went into energy efficient options and have an eye on our environmental impacts as well, the market has grown and there are some great products that don't break the bank out there. And we can talk about that with Chad and with John, and certainly invite you to call in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my radio show, my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment or even a photo there. John, good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Good to be back.
And Chad, great to see you, too.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Great. You busy?
Very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, workload's going good, Larry. Yep.
Well, that's good. And are you getting lots of questions about energy these days and air conditioning?
Oh, well, definitely. I mean, people want their homes to be comfortable, and you're going to find out this summer whether or not you can keep it cool. So.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the... there are lots of possibilities. I think insulation is one. I think one area that we can talk a lot about today, and that not only helps on keeping the heat in, but it also in the winter it helps in keeping the cool.
Right, that insulation, that air sealing, and then I'd like to even hear from some of the listeners on attic fans and whole house fans, those that have them, and wouldn't mind taking a poll, seeing how some of those devices have been working over the last couple of weeks too.
Yeah, I've heard different people have. I mean, some people really like the whole house fan type of idea, and other people think it's not.
Right.
Not a very good idea. So it'd be fun to hear what people have to say.
You know, a lot of it, Larry, has to do with how you use that device, because you really have to be an intelligent consumer of that equipment. You've got to turn it on when it's cool outside, open some windows, pull in that cool air, and then in the morning, you shut your windows, you close up the house, and you don't use the fan. And you keep that hot air outside. So that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Pam and Marshall has a question for you guys. Let's go to her. Pam, hi.
Hi. I have a window air conditioner. I have 550 square foot home, so it's very tiny. And I'm using three fans to pull that through the house. And I'm arguing with a friend that I'm really more energy efficient than I would if I would put in central air. Am I wrong or right?
That's a good question. Generally, we're going to use a little less electricity on that window air conditioner just when it's operating. But if it has to run longer hours to keep the house cool, which is kind of the unknown here, a central air conditioner is probably going to keep the house more evenly cooled and run less hours versus that window air conditioning. So if you have a small house, such as you do, and you keep a certain area, a certain room cool, I would guess that window air conditioner is going to use a little bit less if it has a good thermostat on and you keep a very local area comfortable. But if you're trying to keep the whole house comfortable, and it's a little bit larger of a home, a high-efficiency central air conditioning might be the trick for you.
Oh. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I've got a couple of questions for Mr. Viner. I recently had a energy audit performed on my house, and I'm wondering whether the current program, Focus on Energy, is really working accurately. For instance, they estimated my annual heating bill at $950, roughly, whereas when I looked at my last year's heating, it was under $450, and I know that we had a mild winter, but that seems like the estimates in the program may be questionable. Secondly, when they came up with estimated costs of sealing leaks and things like that, it was roughly $3,900, And the estimated annual savings turn out to be about $355. So that's, for at least society, that's a payback period of 11 or 12 years. Of course, you know, with the incentives to me, it would seem to make sense for me to perform those alterations. But on the other hand, should society really be entering into projects with a 11 or 12 year payback in business, it's usually something more like 5 to 7 years.
Okay. Yeah, a couple good questions. Depending on how they estimated the actual energy consumption, if they're using an energy modeling software tool, we know that it's never going to be right and hit it right on. So there's always going to be error built into the energy modeling software. You know, estimating twice as much, maybe there was a mistake. And this comes back to the individual consultant who's making the decisions and the determination on site, and, you know, less so much the focus on energy program, though they may or may not be working within that infrastructure. I've seen it, and as I've punched numbers as well, I've seen some pretty significant errors, and it's up to that individual consultant to really maybe help you look at your actual utility bills and reconcile that modeled energy use with your actual, and getting that utility data is really important to do. And again, it comes back to the individual to make sure that they're truing that bill up. So we need to keep an eye on that, and we do get those high estimates. Generally, the modeling is going to do that depending on the software that you use. I guess I try to steer people away on the year payback. Having to justify whether it's renewable energy or energy conservation measures based on payback in dollars alone, I think is problematic, because there's so much comfort to be gained. There's often you're making these improvements not only to reduce energy use and, you know, for environmental reasons and your energy costs, but it's comfort in solving and preventing durability issues within the structure that's hard to really put a cost to. So I think a 10-year payback, you know, if somebody's spending $1,600 a year on total energy costs in their home, and they can save $200 to $300 with a payback of, you know, 7 or 10 years, I think the other benefits that we gain from that, such as comfort in your own house, plays a pretty big role.
Yeah. Chad, you want to comment, just chime in for a sec?
Well, I would agree with John. I mean, I think the issue of comfort is impossible to put a value on. If you're not comfortable in your home, I mean, if you're consistently hot when you're running your air conditioner in your upstairs bedrooms, then that's a comfort issue. And it really doesn't matter what your utility bill is, because you're unable to be comfortable in your home. So you may invest in air sealing and insulating, or a better, more efficient air handling system, and you may be told that there's a 20-year payback on that investment. But if you are comfortable immediately and you're able to enjoy your house year-round, when it's 105 degrees outside, then I might be tempted to make that investment as a homeowner. Now, of course, I've had clients often point out that the typical American homeowner is in a home for 7 years. And so why would they invest in anything that has more than a 7-year payback? Well, I mean, I think that in part explains why a lot of our housing stock is not as comfortable and durable as it probably should be.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Greg in Watertown, we turn to you next. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
You bet. Thanks for this opportunity. Larry, I wanted to tell a story of what a group of us are doing in our area that live on small farms in the country, and that is intercepting the well water and running it through a steam coil to extract the coolness out of it. Place a fan in front of it, run the cold water that's used for irrigation or any other type of need out at the farm, and extract all the coolness out of it, and then send it out for the plants for irrigation and use in the kitchen and wherever you need to use it. And that's working really good for one of our crew, and a couple others of us are working to find some coils and get those to work in our place too. Then I had another idea, but I'd like your guest's comment first, please.
Okay. So it's kind of a sounds like a little bit of a geothermal type situation there.
Okay, so you're pulling the water out of the ground, and how are you cooling? You're cooling it down further?
No, we just run it through an old steam coil heater, a big surface finned copper tubing, and then blowing a fan across that, using household air to blow a fan across that.
I see.
And then the water coming in from the well is 55 or something of that nature, and if you blow enough air through it, you can extract several degrees of coolness, I guess, from it. And that's been, you know, that is almost costing us nothing to do. And one friend is completely cooling his house on absolutely everything but the worst days that we had last week.
Yeah,
and
I
then he was using it to augment his air conditioner.
Yeah, I love those ideas, right? So we're making that water work twice for us. And if we can make it work twice or three times, then we're getting certainly more efficiency out of that resource. And, you know, I've thought about the same thing. We have 55 degrees city water coming to our homes. How can we use it in similar ways? But it gets tough to do, but you've certainly taken the concept to a great length there.
And it really wasn't that difficult. Most of the parts were salvaged. It took probably a day's work to hook the thing up from start to finish. The other thing that we were doing is when having to bury a deep drain line, we installed as many utilities as we could, and one of them was air ducting with aluminum rods driven through it. And I was in the process today of hooking up a fan. I wanted to use a thermal chimney on the roof, but that's a couple steps away yet. But hook a fan up to it and draw warm air through the cool ground and the radiator or the aluminum axis radiator fins to disperse heat into the ground, and then charge the ground over the course of the summer to extract heat out of it then in winter. And again, this can be done very, very cheaply once you have the drain line, and I suppose. It's another way to utilize sustainable technologies and not have so much cost going on powering the things.
Right. So that tube in the earth, are you using that to bring in cool air into your home then?
That is correct.
Right. So we have to, they call that an earth tube. It's been a terminology that's been used in the past. And just making sure we do get condensation in that tube, so we have to have it drain properly. And if it's one of the details is handling condensate within that tube, right?
Very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks very much for calling. Pretty self-sufficient guy there.
Yeah, it's great.
And you mentioned moisture. An email from Luann and La Crescent. How do you correct the problem of moisture appearing between double pane windows?
Well, that's actually a failure in the double pane. I mean, a thermopane is a sealed double or triple pane of glass. And the problem with that technology is that eventually the seal will break. And once the seal breaks, you pretty much have to replace the glass.
Yeah.
You can live with the nuisance of the condensation, but you also are living with a less efficient thermopane at that point. So that's we have to replace those every now and then. And a lot of windows now come with a 20-year warranty on the glazing. A commercial window or a high-end residential window will have a 50-year or sometimes a lifetime warranty. So
Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois.
Hello.
Thank you for calling. Hi. Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm wondering the length of time that they recommend that an air conditioner, a central air conditioner, will last. Because our neighbor just had one that had to be replaced, and the technician said 5 years was about the expected life. And I thought, is the man crazy or what?
I think he's crazy.
Yeah, the... you know, you want to get 13-15 years out of an air conditioner. I think that's probably more the recommended lifespan. On a central air conditioner. Yep. So 5 years, it should, with a good installation, last twice as long as 5 years.
And three
for sure.
Times as long, yeah.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Right. Mine is the same age, and I sure don't want to have to replace it.
No.
Right.
You should be okay, Nelson.
All right.
And thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We've got open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a question or a comment there and click like while you're there and we'll send you regular updates. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your home today for repairs or possibly making it cooler, more energy efficient, with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner, a project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. Kurt in Cornucopia has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Kurt. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm on a cell phone. I hope you're able to hear me okay. But I had two comments on the gentleman that called in with the earth tube concept.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of concerns there. First would be Legionnaire's disease when you're trying to deal with that condensate. And if you've got a long run of pipe that you're drawing intake air from, there can be concerns with, you know, mold and even Legionnaire's disease. And secondly, what you often can set up is a situation where you're essentially designing a large radon collection system if you're in the wrong kind of soils when you do those kinds of earth tubes and you're sucking air through that underground pipe.
Hmm.
Yeah, I certainly agree with those concerns. So, they're important matters to take into consideration, absolutely.
So you should be testing if you're doing something like that. You better be testing your air.
Yep. I think there was an alternative strategy to those earth tubes where they're were dealing with some of those condensate. I can't quite recall. I'd have to look that up again. But there were some specific products to handle some of that. But certainly needs to be investigated.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. David in South Milwaukee. Hi.
I'd like to hear your opinion, pros and cons of these non-window portable air conditioners. The one I'm considering is air conditioner and dehumidifier. You know, it seems like a good idea, but then I've had a lot of thoughts which weren't good ideas after I thought about them.
Yeah, I guess I haven't used them or purchased them or really have a lot of contact with them with homeowners using them. So these are portable ACs. You can buy them at the hardware stores and put them in a local area, and they're on wheels, and you can move them around to where you want to stay comfortable. I think if you're going to use them on an intermittent basis where you have maybe you're in a home office for a couple hours a day or and you don't have a window air conditioner and you need a little extra comfort, then I can see some benefit there. But from a long-term strategy, I guess we'd probably want to make a better investment.
Why do you say that?
I guess that portable air conditioner, because of the compressor that it's using, the motors that are involved, we're also adding heat into the house at the same time as we're cooling air. So there's a little bit of heat gain from those units as well as a cooling effect. And I'm going to guess we're going to get a little better efficiencies with certainly a central air conditioning unit versus and quite possibly a window air conditioner, just because of my basic concept of we have bigger coils, evaporator, condenser coils, therefore we get better efficiencies with the air conditioning cycle.
Makes sense.
Yeah, good. Thank you for calling, David. Appreciate it. And Al in Manitowoc, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got a two-story home, and the attic has no eaves or soffits or anything. Now, when I bought it, it had no insulation at all, ventilation in the attic. And when I got a roof put on now, I had a roof vent put the entire length of the roof. And in essence, there's no insulation up there. Is that adequate ventilation to put insulation in? I had heard that don't put insulation in unless you get enough ventilation in your attic.
Well, you've got a few separate issues there that need to be dealt with. And the most important thing to do first is to seal the lid of the home, which is the first step of a good insulation job. I wanted to speak to this. We were talking about how homes can be really hot and uncomfortable, particularly on the second floor in the summer months. And part of the reason is that if our attics are not ventilated, they store a lot of heat. So the heat gets trapped up in that attic cavity, and it might be 130 or 140 degrees up in that attic, and that heat is radiating down into the second floor or whatever the top floor of the house is. So ventilation plays an important role in allowing that heat in the summertime to escape. But the other issue is that if that heat is able to find its way into the wall cavities through electrical and plumbing penetrations, or if it's able to come in around light fixtures, then that heat is literally pouring into the house or pouring into the wall cavities and further contributing to comfort problems and efficiency problems. So we want to do a really good job of sealing up essentially the floor of the attic prior to adding any insulation up there. So if you have an uninsulated attic or a poorly insulated attic, you want to clean it out. You want to seal it up on top of all the wall plates and every place that a wire or other penetration is coming through. And then you want a good blanket of insulation over that. If there isn't really, due to the construction of the home, a good place to add soffit vents, then that's really a detail that you could forego. In a perfect world, we have vents down at the bottom of the roof that allow air to travel all the way from the bottom of the roof deck to the top. And that's really what that ridge vent is designed for that you've installed on your home. But the ridge vent will also do a okay job of just letting the hot air escape. It's not the perfect solution, but it's acceptable. And I think if you seal up things well and then insulate properly, then you're going to have a pretty good system there. And then it's also important that any ventilation fans in the house, like a bathroom fan or a kitchen fan, that those be vented all the way out through the roof or through an exterior wall so that the humidity that you're capturing is not dumped into that attic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you think that ridge vent would be adequate as far as for ventilation purposes? Because there's no soffits, there's nothing there.
Yeah, if you did a really excellent job on the air sealing that Chad was emphasizing, then you know that's the way. And this is assuming you have an attic and it's not a hot roof, per se, or just a sloped roof, right? You can get up in your attic and do the air sealing, and then it's as, you know, just a ridge vent alone is less than ideal, but I think if, again, you followed through with those recommendations, you'd be all right.
Mm-hmm.
What type of material do you use for this sealing that you're talking about before you put down insulation? Is that just foam-type material or what?
Well, it's generally a two-part foam, which is a foam. It's two chemicals that are mixing in the nozzle, and it's generally or almost always applied by a professional. It's not a product that you can pick up at the hardware store or at the big box store. But you also, as a homeowner, you can use caulk, and you can, if you're caulking around, say, a chimney, or any other, something that is flammable, you do need to use special caulks and materials that are non-flammable. But then there are other methods that can be used for a do-it-yourselfer, and just attaching drywall with caulk can often be a relatively good way to seal some cavities or some areas up in the attic.
Yeah.
But it takes a long time to do it with other materials sometimes.
And with the minimal venting that you've got up there, doing it with a blower door test professionally is probably going to be the recommendation so you get that air sealing 100%. That's a pressure test to actually know that the air sealing is perfect, and the only way we'd recommend moving forward with that.
Mm-hmm. And I would just further add that, you know, a great way to go here for many people is to hire a professional insulator who is expert in air sealing to come in and do that part of it. And then you as the homeowner can apply the cellulose or the loose fiberglass or whatever you want to use. You know, you could do that as a do-it-yourselfer, but having the air sealing done professionally and with the proper tools to test it, as John said, is really the best bang for your buck. You're not going to be able to do it yourself for less cost with non-traditional materials than if you were to hire a professional to come in and really get it right.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Mike in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling. Mike, are you there? Oops. Yes. There. Push the button, and then he'll talk. Sorry, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a through-the-wall furnace and air conditioner combo. It's about 13 years old. The heat exchanger is rusting. Is it worth replacing only the heat exchanger?
It sounds like an older model then. And this is your primary heating and cooling in an apartment somewhere? Or?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yep.
13 years old.
I guess if things are getting to that point, off the top of my head, I would say no, would be in replacing that heat exchanger. I don't know the condition of the refrigerant, air conditioning coils, but
had no particular problems.
So just based on age and without looking at it, I wouldn't move forward, but I don't know those costs. You'll have to have a professional take a look.
Yeah, well, you're certainly going to find probably a more efficient furnace and air conditioner than you got.
Yep.
That would be almost a given. All right. Yeah.
Thank you for your thoughts.
Yeah. Richard in Lake Tomahawk. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Very always happy to have this program on, and your guests are always so terrific. We had the blower door test done and had some of the recommends done. And one of the chief ones was to seal around with the pipes and so on in the attic and the wall plates and so on, and then they blew in the ceiling or the attic insulation. And then we had to have a new fan put in and so on and so forth. They made three other recommendations, and they were in this order. One was to insulate around the sill boxes in the basement, and they said we really couldn't effectively do that with ourselves with fiberglass because the block comes up and it is partially finished off on top of the block with brick for, you know, appearance purposes. It really doesn't sit on a sill plate. The house doesn't. And they said that they could blow in foam, two-part foam in there. And we looked it up, and they said that it doesn't off-gas much. But I was doing some research online, and it seems that it can off-gas for a long time. And there was a recommendation that there's something more pure, like I think it's soy-based, but we can't seem to find a contractor who does that.
Well, there are some contractors out there that do utilize that material, but it's really important that the foam that is applied down at the sill is a closed-cell foam. And there are some soy-based closed-cell foams, but all of these products do have some off-gassing. And the newer formulations, even on the traditional product, is considerably less toxic than what was used 10 or 20 years ago. So some of the information that you may be seeing is dated. It is true that we do have to be concerned about these things, but I think the industry has come a long way in improving those formulations and making them safer. So to fully answer your question, you know, there are multiple issues you have to look at. You really have to make sure that foam is doing what you need it to do in the location where it's being applied. And the reason we need it to be closed cell right there at the foundation wall is that there are a lot of moisture issues right there. And if moisture is passing through that, that can cause some additional problems. So we need a closed cell foam to be applied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Two other recommends they made was that we do something to the walls, too, although it wasn't as primary as the other. And upstairs is aluminum. They said they could take that off and blow it in from the outside, and then the downstairs is brick, and they said they could they'd have to drill holes on the inside of the building. And in the plaster, and then blow it through. We were wondering whether there's that as much value in doing that as if we did the sill boxes and so on.
Yeah, I guess the walls, if they're under insulated or uninsulated to the point and the material that exists in there allows for additional insulation to be installed, the walls are going to take priority over your sill boxes from, I would say, from a comfort and an energy perspective. Though it sounds like with plaster and brick, there's some concern just on the difficulty and the cost that it's going to be to get into your walls and install more. If you're going to have to weigh comfort in your utility bills on your own, on the home and see where it fits, but the walls are going to be more cost, but more savings, and more I think more benefit once the walls are done. The sill boxes certainly are a place where there's a lot of heat loss, but the surface area of your walls are so much higher, so there's more gain to be had there.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a kind of a follow-up on the non-window AC email from Ryan in Onalaska. I think those non-window ACs vent to the outside through a tube of some sort. Otherwise, there'd be no net gain of cooling. After all, an air conditioner is really just a method of exchanging heat. An AC that doesn't vent is akin to opening a refrigerator door and expecting it to cool a room. It will never cool the room because the heat is just exchanged to the coils on the back.
Yeah, there's that heat gain there. And if there's a tube, like I hadn't installed one or seen one being used, but if they're running a tube to dump the heat to the outside through a window, they're obviously not punching a hole in someplace, but they're using it through an operable window someplace. So that makes a lot of sense. I didn't, whether the heat gain that's there, they get some gains in efficiency out of that air conditioning cycle where they're extracting heat. Whether it's equal or not, I'm not 100% sure about that. But
Wenzel in Amherst, hi.
Yes, hi. I've been mulling over putting some kind of insulation on the ceiling of this old workshop I have. It's like a plaster ceiling. It's 12 feet high, and I don't want to go up into the attic because I got it full of lumber. And so I want to use that for storage, so I wanted to, you know, insulated from the bottom, you know, inside the workshop. And I got a quote of under $1,000 for that two-part foam blown in there. And my thought was, well, okay, it'd be kind of bumpy and everything. And then would I be just as far ahead, like getting 2 inches of that rigid styrofoam or something and screwing that up into those joists and, you know, just calling it a day? Or what would you suggest?
Yeah, I'm not quite the situation. Is your... From down below, there's a ceiling right now? Did you say there's a plastered ceiling, or is it opened up from below?
No, it's a plaster ceiling.
So, yep. Plaster ceiling, and so you're trying to gain access. You could go up in the attic, move some boards, things that are stored, and gain access to that floor system from above?
Well, I could, but...
there's a lot there,
just
huh?
Leave all that lumber up there.
Is there anything attached to the ceiling from below? Or is it just an open ceiling, pretty much? I mean, you know, the plaster is 12. You said it's a 12-foot high ceiling.
Yeah, it's plaster and lath, and there's just some cords running around and some extension or some fluorescent lights drop down off of it. But that's
okay.
All.
So maybe the most cost-effective way would be to take the foam board that you speak of and install that on the inside to, you know, create a layer as thick as you can afford. To have continuous foam, and then you're going to need to, if you want anything to be suspended from that ceiling, you're going to need to add some strapping or some furring that is attached all the way through the foam into the ceiling rafters.
Mm-hmm.
That's well attached if anything's going to be suspended from it. But otherwise, if it's just a finished ceiling, you know, you can install that material, and with the foam board, if you use a polyiso with either the metallic or the black coating on it, that's a fire-rated material that you can simply install, and you don't have to go over it. But you could cover over it with drywall, or you could just tape the seams of the material itself. As long as it's air-sealed well,
mm-hmm.
Then a couple of layers of that might do the trick and give you the most bang for the buck. Yep. You know, because if you put the foam in between the rafters, then you're going to have thermal bridging at each one of those ceiling joists. So,
and I would go like to a Menards or Lowe's or something, and they would have that material you speak of.
Yeah, the one with the fire rating, if you're going to leave it exposed, the brand is Thermax. So okay. You would really want to look for it's a foil-faced, continuous foam sheathing Thermax.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. And Maya in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a couple of years home, about 3 years ago, we had new windows installed, and there's a window in our family room, practically the whole wall, the length of the room. Very nice. It's got those blinds inside, the two glass panes. But like this morning again, I go in the room, and the outside of the window is covered with water, you know, like condensation. And my husband said, well, that's just condensation. And I'm saying, well, not on the other windows. Is that normal, or something should be done about that?
Well, it's because the exterior of the glass is cool and we got condensate, and it might be, you know, do you have a forced air conditioning system, and is there a register that blows on that particular window? Is there a register that just blows cold air on that glass?
I should know that. I don't know. I know there's a heating unit right by the, I'm looking at it. There is something that looks like a register there. Right?
Register that's probably blowing on it. So maybe that gets a lot of air coming out of that register, and it's keeping that particular glass cooler than the rest.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So there's diverters, things that you could set on that register to maybe blow it and direct it out into the room instead of having it go up and wash that window. You could see if that would solve it.
Okay. So it's not basically some structural thing that we have to worry about. That way.
Hopefully not. not the condensation itself is a result of your air conditioner is probably just keeping that glass too cool, and you can fix that, and hopefully it hasn't, you know, that moisture hasn't run down and found a place to reside, and I assume it just evaporates and is gone pretty quickly.
Right, about an hour later it's gone, but I just, you know, you walk in the room and you kind of wonder what's going on. Okay, so basically try to do something with the register.
Yeah, I think if you notice cold air blowing on that glass, just direct it in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And thanks for calling, Maya. I appreciate it. Janet in New Berlin, your turn. Hi.
Hi, I have a question. We have a house that's 24 years old, and we have the original furnace and the original central air. Now, we have a walk-in closet in the master bedroom that is built out into the garage. And we do have a crawl space that runs the front of the house. It is a Cape Cod. It gets unbearably hot, I think, 9 months out of the year on the second floor. Do you think it's because of the closet, or do you think it's because of the crawl space?
Well, it's probably a combination of these factors. A house like yours, and we see this all the time, typically they were built without much regard for creating a well-sealed envelope that keeps the interior, finished interior, comfortable. And so traditional insulation methods that have been used, where fiberglass batting is simply hung up in the various stud cavities and rafter cavities, those systems allow a lot of air to flow from the attic space into those wall spaces, and that heat is there in the warmer months, and that heat is radiating into the room. The fiberglass is really not doing the job of isolating the temperature in the attic from the temperature in your living space. So there are some ways to fix that depending on how accessible the various spaces are, but it really just comes down to creating a well-sealed envelope around the entire house, and it's those spaces are contributing to your comfort issues.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the, often you get that hot attic, what comes to my mind when I've seen is hot attic air from that garage attic just goes right underneath your master bedroom walk-in closet, and it's heating up that space, and then it gets into those joists and finds its way into the home. So there's ways to block and seal that, but you need someone to take a look at it.
There you go. Good luck.
And I would just add that, you know, when the home performance evaluators come in, they're going to come in with an infrared camera, and it actually allows us to see those hot cavities wherever they are, where the air is getting into the structure and heating up your interior. You can literally see it when they are going around with that camera. It's like an X-ray looking for heat. And, of course, in the wintertime, we see cold pockets, and in the summer, we see hot pockets. In conjunction with a blower door, which is going to make the air move through all the places where the air is moving, those two tools used properly together really will show you the cause of your problem. So I would highly recommend that you work with a contractor that's going to utilize those tools to actually fix your problem.
Okay, now the contractor is actually called a insulator, or I mean, what is their title exactly?
Yeah, it could be insulator. I would probably take a look at the Focus on Energy website, and those that are working within the program, they're going to have a list of contractors that are qualified for the Home Performance with Energy Star program, and they're going to use those tools as a matter of course.
Yep. There you go. Good luck.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet, for calling. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about keeping your home cool and other kinds of home repairs with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And, John, you were telling me that the solar electric systems are worth a look right now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that putting in a photovoltaic system is approximately $4 to $4.50 a watt is some of the quotes that I've been seeing. And that's been at the lowest I've ever seen it. So I think it's a technology that has certainly a lot of promise, and it's very close and dear to my heart, and I have a small system on my roof and would certainly advocate it for people to take a look at solar electric systems. There, on the federal level, there is a 30% tax credit for your home. Focus on Energy just has some new incentives that are out, but I think they do. It's a first-come, first-served basis, so focusonenergy.com. I know you have to kind of reserve those funds and fill out some application forms for some dollars there as well. So especially this year with all the sun, so those systems, people that do have them have really been cranking out the power this summer. So
just, very cool.
Yeah, as you get your home energy, you know, energy upgrades, a nice renewable energy system is going to be a nice add-on.
We have Nancy in Fitchburg with a question for you, or a comment. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I am calling with a wholehearted vote for the whole house fan.
All right.
Oh, good.
We asked for some comments, and here's the first. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we had a fan put in when we bought our house 20 years ago, and we just have one of the inexpensive, I think it's a 24-inch fan. It's a little noisy when you first turn it on, but you kind of get used to it. But we hardly ever use our air conditioning, and we do exactly what you suggested before, open it up when we get home from work. I think it probably works well for us because we're both gone during the day. When we get home, we open up the windows downstairs, turn it on, pull the cool air in. At night, we close the windows downstairs, open them up upstairs, turn it down on low, and we've got a nice, easy, steady breeze that comes in the windows all night long, and we think it's great.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. So it's that fan is located central in a hallway someplace, right? And
yeah.
It has louvers that open up when you turn that on. And
yeah, it actually, we had to eliminate the louvers and make an insulated cover of our own just because of the way the joists ran. It didn't line up
with the louvers, so we had to sort of create our own insulating situation.
Yeah, that's good. That's always one of the challenges is in the wintertime when you're not using it, making sure that that's not a large hole in the home, right?
Right. Yep. We cover it on the top side with cardboard and insulation, and then put this insulated cover on the bottom in the wintertime.
Okay.
Very cool.
The one question that I've always had is it really more efficient in terms of what we're paying for electricity? You've got this big fan running as opposed to the air conditioning running. But I think since we're not cooling the house all day long, even though we're drawing power the whole time we have it on in the evening, I think it probably is we're more efficient doing this than had we been running the air conditioning all day long.
Yeah, how many hours does the whole house fan run? So you come home at 5-6 o'clock, and do you turn it on right away, or do you wait for the outside to cool off a little further?
It depends on what the temperature is outside. Usually it's turned on pretty soon after we get home, and we'll run it through the evening, and it just sort of depends on how hot it is. You know, if it's really still pretty warm, we'll run it on the higher speed. If it's fairly cool, we can turn it down and just run it on the lower speed, and then oftentimes we turn it off when we go to bed. But as hot as it's been recently, we've been leaving it on through the evening, and we did use our air conditioning last week when it was super hot. But the other thing that we've been thinking about doing too, there's a new kind that sort of has a central unit with arms that go out to individual rooms, and we're considering replacing it with that. That's quite a bit more expensive, but it's quiet, and that's the reason why we would replace
it. So, now I haven't seen that on the market where it has branch ducts to actually cool off and push some of that air into the rooms.
I have not heard of that.
Well, it's basically we've done it for a few clients where we just take a multi-point remote blower and pull air from various bedrooms, and it can
there
be done.
Go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just,
all right.
It's
thanks.
Called a super fan. You can Google it and
super
find
fan.
It. Super fan. Yep. All right.
Thanks,
all right. Thank you.
Thanks, Nance. Appreciate it. Phil in Wauwega. Hi.
Hello, Larry. I am in a split level home built in the early 70s. It was all electric heated in the ceiling. I am a steam fitter. I put a boiler in floor hot water heat and have no air conditioning. I'm looking at a mini split system, but the issue is where I would like to place the evaporator inside is on an interior wall. And I have kind of an issue with trying to figure out how I'm going to do that. Get the condenser outside and get the line pack, as they call it, from the outside to the inside to where I'd like to install this.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well, on the split level, there's usually a common wall that maybe some utilities, washer, dryer. You know, if I think of a split level, I come in and go downstairs around the corner, and there's a utility room, and there's a common wall with chaseways that run all the way to the attic sometimes. I don't know if
you got that.
You've got that. So,
I do. So
if no one's air sealed that from an energy efficiency standpoint to plug that, that's, you know, there you have a chaseway down to the lower level. I don't know if that helps you or unless you've got all finished ceilings, but. And if you do have all finished ceilings, you're just, you know, you're really out of luck going down unless you're going to open up a ceiling. So then that common wall and that split level, can you find your way to the attic and then?
I can. Now, I've been told that I lose efficiency, serious efficiency, going across the insulation in the atop the insulation in the attic.
Yeah, I imagine that's.
I guess I could bury. I just had that blown in cellulose last fall, and I'd rather not go up there and disturb it. But I do have a chase going out in my hot water heat system across the ceiling of what is the drive under garage that is no longer that anymore. But nonetheless, in order to run that out, from what I'm being told, is that the connection on the backside of this evaporator is rigid, and you need kind of about 10-inch area for a radius for this to turn down and be able to go down the wall and then out that down that chase, as you talked about, and then out that the soffit that I made.
In the garage, yeah, or what was the garage? Yeah, so we know we're going to have a 10 or 12-inch box wherever that sticks through an interior wall, right?
Right. Okay.
No getting around
there's
that.
No way around. There's no way around that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how you make that look good, a little knick-knack shelf or, you know, yeah, imagination needs to be used there. I don't know.
Let the unit protrude into the room, and then that, you know, the unit itself kind of becomes the box. I mean, build it into the room that you're installing it in, perhaps.
Oh, that's a great idea. I had not considered that.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? Oh. Yeah.
All right, right. Huh. Outstanding. Thank you. For your help. I Googled remodel split level, and my computer just about laughed itself off the table. unbelievable how little you can do with these things. But anyway, I appreciate you guys' help.
Phil, thank you so much, Phil. I appreciate your call. Another satisfied customer there. Talking with our two guests today, Chad Spade at Chad's Carpentry and John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, with us until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Some of the best investments we can make on our home also help us minimize our impact on the environment, but with all the different options to weigh, it's hard to know how to make that smart decision. And that's why we're lucky to have Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin come by every couple months to help us out. And thanks again for coming by, you guys. Appreciate it very much. Lots of callers online. I think we might just as well go back to the phones and see what is up. Jane in Fitchburg with us. Jane, hi. Do you have a comment?
Yes, I have some comments about whole house fans.
Yes.
And, one thing I wanted to mention is that if somebody has gas pilot lights in their house, they need to be careful to make sure they have enough windows open so that it doesn't blow out their gas pilot lights.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That could cause a problem. I think this must be an ideal year for whole house fans because of the low humidity. But ordinarily, my experience has been that in the evening when the air cools off outside, there's so much humidity in the air that I don't really want to bring that humidity in the house. So I have a whole house fan that really hasn't gotten a lot of use.
Hmm.
And that's another thing to consider.
Another way to look at it. Thanks for calling. Let's get comments, Chad?
Well, it's a valid concern. And, I mean, the comment that an earlier caller had made about, well, what's the energy use of the whole house fan versus the air conditioner? You know, the big advantage to the air conditioner is that it is going to dehumidify the air. The big advantage to the whole house fan, if the air outside is worth bringing in, is that it's fresh air from the outside. So, no. You know, it really does depend on particular conditions at the time as to which one of those devices is going to be the most satisfactory.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Verna in Waukesha. Your turn now. Hi, Verna.
Hi. I need to know, do geothermal systems really work?
Yeah.
It's a trick question. Of course they work. And I guess I'm wondering what prompts the question.
I'm looking at trying to install one and trying to convince my husband that they really work.
Mm. So it's certainly a solid technology, and if we want, and Larry has a geothermal system in his home, and we were discussing how low those energy bills are, and really from an air conditioning standpoint and a heating standpoint, there is investment up front. But
right.
I think if you want, you know, from a residential perspective, geothermal systems are about as efficient from an efficiency standpoint as you can get and have some pretty low utility bills. But
I think the resale on your home, too, if you go to sell,
okay,
is going to be, they were saying, is really good.
Right. So if you've got the right location with the land lot that has the available space to do geothermal, there's no question that it works. We just have to weigh. Here's where I'll weigh and put some heavy weight on the economics of that investment versus alternatives. But
right.
No question, the technology is does a great job.
And you should go out. You would need to have the DNR or someone from the DNR approve your site, if I'm not mistaken. We had to have. And
okay.
And as it turned out, someone four blocks away from us could not have it done.
Wow.
Well, we were able to, so it's probably something to look into before you even go too far.
All right. Are there maintenance concerns, or is it pretty maintenance-free? I know you have to have it checked regularly, but...
Yeah, and that goes without saying. You know, every couple of years you can give some just a service checkup on most units. I don't know of any. If we get a good setup, a good installation, a good commissioning, that unit is proved to work right on the onset. Those things are going to be pretty sturdy for
you. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. And Anil in Glendale, hello.
Hello. Good morning. I think it's about afternoon. I have a question. First of all, I'm one of those energy nuts, you know, constantly monitoring, you know, and
yeah.
The best I can do. I am in this house for about 33 years, and the house is built in 1958 or 60, sometime around that. The original furnace, Lennox, you know, that I had to get rid of it, not because it wasn't functioning, just to be saving the energy and looking at all those things. So I went into this whole project of getting new furnace, high efficiency, and at the same time when I was doing, I thought I better change my central air conditioner as well. So both of those units were changed about 5 years ago. The experience I had is that it is doing the job, I would say, the energy saving, but we never felt that warmth during the winter time that we used to feel when the old furnace was there. I went, you wouldn't believe, I went all the way to the carrier vice president asking all the questions and never got satisfied. And I time to time listened to your show very nicely done, and I thought I asked this question to your guest, and I'll keep quiet and listen to you.
Doesn't that have something to do with the sort of the energy efficient nature of furnaces now, the way they run? Could, because the older ones would run more often.
Yeah, so I'm assuming we're talking about a natural gas furnace to a natural gas furnace, and maybe you had, whether it was an 80% furnace that you changed to now a 90-some percent furnace. Is that pretty correct?
About right.
I do not know. Those days they made 80%. Maybe it was maybe less than that.
Even less. So you're seeing the energy savings, and you're just curious more about the comfort factor, where the air discharge isn't as hot as it used to be, and you really like that.
Yeah. I mean, that is true. The air is not hotter as it used to be, and I don't know if there is any recourse to that, or I have to just live with that. By the way, the house was energy audited twice, and they gave me excellent marks and all that, you know, and I still feel that particular problem during the winter days.
Uh-huh. So have you looked at your fan speed then? So, you know, one way to increase the discharge temperature is to slow the fan down. So, you know, that's one possible strategy, at least to look at. Have you checked that out yet?
Yes, and I have that one of the most supposedly advanced thermostat Infinity from the Carrier, and I put it on auto during those times, so it takes care of whatever the fan is. But sometimes I do keep a manual continuous low fan on. They told me that it helps to maintain and stabilize the temperature, so sometimes I do that.
So is the fan motor a high-efficiency ECM fan motor, variable speed?
Yes.
Yeah. So the keeping the fan on 24/7, that's your call and whether it improves comfort. So I wouldn't do it if at first I would experiment. I'd shut it off and say and turn it back on. And did I notice a difference in comfort in the house? And if not, I would leave it off and not run that fan and save on the electricity costs. But
okay. So
you have to make that decision, not a contractor, if you notice something, you know, that it improves, go ahead and do it if you'd like. I guess I'm not sure the question I'm trying to answer here. You know, we're not going to be able to get increased discharge temperature the only way to really do that is if we know that the burners are firing at the approved or manufactured rate, is adjusting the fan speed. And even though it's a variable fan speed, as it ramps up to its target, you can change, or service technician can change that target of that fan speed, so that when it's at its max flow for the heating season, it could be lesser or lower. So that parameter still could be changed, and that's really your only option to increase or lower discharge temperature.
And the other thing I would add is that, you know, as John said, the system is working properly and most efficiently when those temperatures are lower. And so if you really like the sensation of hot air blowing on you, then I would recommend, and this is not going to be the energy efficient thing, but to have that, I would recommend just getting a little electric blower that you take around the house with you. I mean, I say that I'm not joking. John's giving me
you are 100% knocking me. Right, and we do practice that exactly what you said.
Well, right, and so, and I mean, we give this advice actually often with respect to humidity, because sometimes people want more humidity in their home, and we say, well, you know, instead of soaking your entire house with a humidifier, which is not a good idea, if you need a little humidity in your bedroom, then might you consider a portable humidifier, so that you provide the humidity where you need it and not hit the whole house with it. So I think that maybe that would be a good way to solve this particular need.
Good luck, Anil. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's not going to be the most energy efficient way, but it will solve the comfort issue, or it could. Paul and Racine, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes. Good afternoon, guys. My question is, I've got a central air unit sitting on the south side of my house in direct sunlight pretty much the entire day. And I'm wondering if what you guys think about the importance of having some shade over that. Like in the case of, had I had a tree planted there at one time, that would have been maybe a difference. If I need to put up something just to provide some shade. Wondering about the efficiency of the exchanger.
Yeah, we can gain some efficiency in that condensing unit by not having it in the direct sunlight. Can I say that you're going to, you know, save $20, $30 a month? No. Can I say you're going to save $10 a month? Maybe we're getting close. But it's a handful of dollars that you're going to save in the efficiency. But maybe it's even, you know, we can look at the life of the equipment or how hard that air conditioner has to work. But so certainly there's some gains there. But if we're going to do some landscaping and we want to, you know, make that side of the house more comfortable, just because we want to shade the house and include that air conditioning and provide a landscape strategy, you're going to have some gains. But I wouldn't spend a couple thousand dollars landscaping just for that air conditioner.
Right. So maybe $10 a month savings.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, we might average homeowner in Wisconsin or somebody that's using that air conditioner could be, you know, maybe we're doing $30, $50 a month to run that air conditioner, and you're going to save a small percentage of that.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. I got an email from Patrick that goes along with some of the conversations we've been having here. He wants some advice on what to be thinking about when buying a new furnace, and wonder if you guys could give him a website to become a better informed consumer, and are there incentive programs for Wisconsin homeowners for new furnaces, for example?
Yeah, Focus on Energy does have some incentives for qualifying furnaces, boilers, and air conditioners. So, and they probably actually have a qualifying product list, I'm going to guess, on their website, or you can find their qualifying list of units for those rebates. So that's a good place to go. They're going to have from an efficiency standpoint, certainly they're going to have the high end there to provide our public dollars and incentives back to the public. They're going to want to set the benchmark fairly high and in efficiency. From a resource standpoint on furnaces, maybe I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't have one right off the top of my head.
Chad, we had an email from Heather who wonders the easiest way to determine if a wall is load-bearing. I have a 15-foot long wall running parallel to my roof line. It sits about 8 feet from one exterior wall and 15 feet from the other exterior wall. It's parallel to each of these. You can picture that.
Yeah, really, what determines if a wall is load-bearing is whether or not the structure above it is, in fact, bearing on it. So, for example, the ceiling joists. I'm going to assume that this wall just has a roof over it and a ceiling over it, that there's no floor occupied above. So there's an attic above this room or these rooms. And if the ceiling joist, which is the lumber that the drywall or plaster is attached to, if those are running parallel to this wall, then they are not resting on the wall. They're resting on the walls that this wall in question is attached to, you know. So in that case, the odds are pretty good that it is not a load-bearing wall. But it's possible that there could be some posts or something else up in the attic, which is bearing on that, going up to, say, a ridge beam. It's also possible that the house has trusses and that the trusses are on the wall, but that the trusses might be designed to span the entire house, in which case it's not a load-bearing wall, even though at first glance it would appear to be. So there, this is often a complicated question. There's not a simple answer, and so a qualified professional should look at it and give some advice.
It was interesting for me. This is just slight, not really off topic, but a little bit maybe. When we were in England looking at gardens and some of the homes, the wood, we had homes that were, you know, first built in 1600, and the beams and how they were attached to each other with peg attachments is really fascinating to look at, and there are some pretty ingenious folks doing that work back then, and right. It's still standing after all those years. Kathy in West Salem, your turn. Hi, Kath.
This is Kelly.
Oh, Kelly, sorry. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. See, I'm talking about cooling off my garage, which is insulated and attached to the house. I don't know if this is right or not, but anyway, on the floor, on the house side, there's a 2-foot by 2-foot hole that originally was covered up with a board. And when I removed that board and removed the insulation, you could see straight down into the basement. So what I did was put a fan in front of that hole and blow the 66 degree air from the basement into the garage. And I'm wondering if that, is, viable or if it's not a good thing to do.
It certainly can be a viable thing to do. I guess what comes to mind as we pull that air out of the basement is ensuring that our combustion appliances are going to function properly. The chimneys, if we have a water heater that goes into a chimney, and as we start pulling air out of a basement area, we have to think, where does that air come from? And usually it has to come, if we pull it from the house, which the basement is in the house, and we push it to outside the house, which is your garage, the air has to come in the house to feed the fan. And it comes into the house to feed the fan from chimneys. It's one of the biggest, unobstructive, easiest path for our air to come into our house when we start exhausting air out. So if that's the case, then we have the concern when the water heater or a fireplace or a furnace fires up, and we'll use the water heater because it's a nice example here in the summertime. You never know when it's come on, if it's vented into a chimney. And then the flue gases might not go up the chimney because your fan's pulling air down the chimney. So we have to make sure that that's not the case. And if it's not, and you have a power vent water heater or electric water heater and no chimneys in your house, then less of a concern there for me.
Okay, because there's also, I have central air, and in the basement there is a vent where it blows cold air into the basement. Well, that's where it gets part of its coolness from, but it's just because it's subterranean, I thought. That's probably where the majority of the coolness in the basement is coming from.
Yeah, yeah, it could be, but as we, again, we're pushing air outside the house, and it has to be made up someplace inside the house. It's not coming from, you know, our distribution system of our furnace. If we exhaust 100 cubic feet per minute outside of our house, 100 cubic feet per minute's coming in our house from outside someplace else.
Gotcha. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Les in Lakeland, Minnesota, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking... enjoy your show.
Thank you.
We have a air-to-air heat exchanger, you know, that has the intake about 4 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we pick up the dryer smells, and you pick up the, you know, when they spray the lawn next door, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff.
Not
ends
good.
Up coming back through the air-to-air heat exchanger in the summertime. We were wondering if there's, you know, can we elevate, is there some way would it be a good idea to move that exchanger and move the intake up someplace or get it higher? How much higher off the ground can you go with?
Yeah, I think no real limit there. Whether your structure is the limit to get it to a clean place. So right now, I assume it comes out through your basement joist and out your rim.
Right, out the rim joist.
Out the rim joist, and that's often where they come, and we try to locate them in a nice area where there's fresh air, which doesn't seem like you have that at the moment.
So you can move that out.
Yeah, you can move it, take it, move it out where you see fit with what your structure allows. There's really, I think common sense is the limiting factor here is for that intake. You might not put it right next to a gas meter if you got natural gas there because there's a pressure relief valve, you know. So
right, that releases natural gas every so often. Yeah,
you know, so there's things that we got to use common sense. So there's limits, but if you're just look around the outside of your house and you're in the clear and you can get the duct there and punch a hole in your rim, you're good to go.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, gee, we answered a lot of questions today, and I really appreciate you guys coming by once again to answer them, and you'll be back in about 2 months, and we'll do it all over again.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds great, Larry.
Thanks, guys. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and go to his website is chadscarpentry.com, chadscarpentry.com. And John Viner, the Energy Center of Wisconsin, I think you guys have a web. You guys have a site for that, too, don't
you? You bet. ECW.org, so the Energy Center. Take a look. A lot of research into energy-saving products and training and education for primarily the contracting world that's out there, less for the homeowner side. But still, if you're a do-it-yourself or some of our courses still are beneficial.
And Chad's got a bunch of photography up there, pictures up there of work that you've done, including, I think, Judith's.
That's correct.
Judith's Sears Plus Sun's work.
Check out our solar panels online.
That's the way. that's the place to go, chadscarpentry.com. Thanks again, guys. They'll be back. We'll do it again. Tomorrow at 11, another edition of Garden Talk. Ed Lyon and Ed Glover from Allen Centennial Gardens talk about rock gardens. Stay with us.